thank you, Selena. What she just told you, I have to tell that to my new patient when they come in a much shorter version without the slides. But it's very helpful that you understand your disease. I think that's the only way you and I can work together, because if the patient doesn't understand why you're doing this and why, they're not going to cooperate. I'm the voice of experience. When I started studying this disease, we were calling it pre-leukemia. There's no such word as myelodysplastic syndrome when I got interested in this. My original interest when I was training, and I trained at Penn too, in this campus, doesn't look the same anymore. There's new buildings now. But I was interested in low blood counts. Why do people have low blood counts? And in my country, where I came from, aplastic anemia was very common. We see a new patient almost every month. So when I came to the United States, it turned out that aplastic anemia is very rare. So all my patients with low blood counts had bone marrows that were full of cells. And we couldn't understand, if the cells are there, why aren't they working? And that's how we got interested in all this. And used to collaborate with Dr. Peter Noel, who is very famous for discovering the abnormal chromosome in the condition called chronic myelogenous leukemia, and called the chromosome Philadelphia chromosome, which was discovered here in Philadelphia. And he was working down the hall, and I said, look, I have all these patients. Maybe we can find out what's going on by looking at their chromosomes. And because of that research, we now use the chromosome as a very important part, because I would call him and say, this patient with this particular chromosome, they go to leukemia very quickly. So we could identify the high-risk group from the low-risk group. So those are the things. I'm just telling you how important research is in this condition. Because when I first started, there was no medicine or drugs that were working. I was working with no drug that was effective. Everything that we tried didn't work. And I want to thank my patients who were just like you, who agreed to participate in the clinical trial that Dr. Luger just showed you with lenalidomide. My patients agreed to participate in that. And you're getting now the benefits of those patients who originally tried. So I think clinical trials are very important for us to advance. And the benefit by your participation will be the next generation of patients that are coming in. So I would like to open your mind to such things as clinic. Don't be afraid of the word clinical trial. These are very important part of developing better and newer treatment. What else? If you want to ask any questions, there are a lot of new things that we're not allowed to tell you, but if you're interested.
We can lock the door.
I know there's a clinical trial that's been going on for a while where they're using oral Vidaza as opposed to infusion. Can you tell me where that might stand at this point in time?
I think they're just finishing the early data from the oral. Mm-hmm. I know Dr. Monero at Garcia Monero in MD Anderson did that original trial. It's still, we don't know how well it's absorbed. I think that's what's important.
So The current study that's ongoing is a study in low-risk disease. It's patients who otherwise would not necessarily need it because they don't know how it compares to standard IV Vidaza. The study that's being done, patients get the pill and then they spend a lot of time getting blood work done to see how well the azacitidine is being incorporated into their system. And that's kind of the level where the, of that agent right now.
But it's more than that, yes.
Some of the foreign countries, if I recall having read this properly, we're doing some research with high doses of vitamins, vitamin K, and vitamin D.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. I'm one of my research has been with what we call analog of vitamin A, which what we call retinoic acid. And it was one of the trials that we did early on. And since we entered everybody that was including, we didn't know IPSS score then, we were treating everything. And it didn't seem to work in the aggressive. And in fact, when we wrote up the paper, we said it was negative. However, in the early stage, there were a few patients that did well on it. And I've been interested in, I noticed that some of you are early, you're not requiring transfusions. Most of our trials are patients who require blood transfusions or having bleeding and infections. We had strict criteria. So most of the time when you're early, we're just supposed to observe and watch how you're doing. My interest is, can I do something early to prevent that? So we may have to do a clinical trial where one group gets the vitamins and everything, and that one group that doesn't. So we can see if it does make any difference. See, that's how we learn. We do clinical trials. And that's why Selena and I are here, because we do clinical trials. And when I used to stand here and said there's no treatment available for MDS, now we're able to say, hey, we have this and we have that. And maybe coming. So whenever the patient gets depressed, I tell them, don't despair. Every day we're still working. There are new drugs that are being developed. And who knows, you may benefit from it. You know, today it's not available, but maybe in 2 or 3 months it may be available.
I have, I've been going to see a doctor to treatment for my myodysplasia, and my blood count is a criteria, and it's been up to, it's down, it was down to 8, then it would back up to
9.
Almost 11, was it?
10.4.
You're on Procrit?
I was on no drugs at all.
No drugs, okay.
And so then it started going down again, but it stopped, it was at 9.8 for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a CAT scan done for another reason. And now it's down to 9.4. Well, the point is that the doctor wants, every time I go there, he's leaving it up to me, but I'm supposed to be eligible for some kind of an infusion.
Injection.
And what?
An injection.
Yeah,
well,
an injection.
Probably
yeah.
Erythropoietin was
yes,
there.
That's
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I did read that the side effects of that, one of the side effects is cancer. So,
okay.
So
right. I understand your problem.
I've had cancer twice already, and I don't.
Okay.
I really don't know what to do about that problem of, you know, taking that transfusion. What was it?
An injection.
An injection.
Yeah.
and running the risk of getting another cancer or whatever. This is a problem.
I think sometimes too much information is bad.
I do read up a lot on that stuff.
So the two things to know about that are that cancer that has been reported, that is not in this patient population.
Right? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It's not in this patient population. It's when people were given that agent who had hemoglobins that were much higher. So there's really no risk of cancer to MDS patients taking erythropoietin.
No risk, okay.
See, we're supposed to tell you all this even though it's not in the same context as yours. And that's what the government requires us to do.
What was the drug that you had mentioned? You said you mentioned the name of the...
The retinoid is Accutane.
Yeah.
It's used for acne. It's when we started it, because there was some data information that similar drug works for leukemia, what we call acute promyelocytic leukemia, and it different. It makes the cell, as Selena showed you, from the immature cell to the more mature.
Yeah.
So it's what we call differentiating agent. Okay. I think, well, I can't tell you if it works or not, unless we do that.
Well, he's very conservative. He wanted to start out on very low doses and see what happens from there.
Yeah.
It's down to 9.4, and if it doesn't go back up,
yeah.
If it goes the other way, I guess I'll take it.
There's a reason why we call this pre-leukemia, because even if you're low risk, if we wait long enough, maybe more than five years may take. Eventually, in my mind, if you don't die from other causes, will go to leukemia, because the low risk, they get new chromosome abnormality along the way. So I think we're missing an opportunity to do something early. The reason why we have a condition, what we call pre, is it gives us a reason to treat or to make a difference in the long run. I think one of the objectives is to prevent leukemia. That's one of the things that we're interested in, prevention. Yeah. Yes.
Can you please clarify that? So. A low-risk patient, my husband, for example, who's had the RARS classification, has been low-risk, his percent blast continues to be low, 5% over time. He will also convert to leukemia, because that's different than what we have learned so far in the history of his having
disease.
Well,
that's the problem. I think maybe the foundation should have a registry of all this early and see what happens to them.
He's been getting transfusions. He's been through a number of the different drug protocols that both you have mentioned this morning, but we still thought he was going to be low risk throughout the course of his disease and not convert to leukemia.
A good number of patients will never develop.
Okay, because I misunderstood what...
As you know, these patients, you're all different from each other. They're not one disease. And that's the reason why it's so hard to tell you what's going to happen is because of that reason. And I think that's the reason why we should continue studying this and learn about it, is how do we tell which ones are going to turn into the worst form, which is leukemia. Yes.
When I was diagnosed back in November of 2005, they did the typical biopsy bone marrow. I have not had one since.
Okay.
What is your position with respect to a repeat to find out what progress has happened, you know, what the progress is?
Yeah. See, we don't enjoy putting a needle in
your
body.
I don't enjoy it either.
People accuse me that, you know, I'm doing it for myself. It's not the reason. So we need a reason to go back there and look. If there's something that's developed, that's new, you used to have normal white count, and now your white count's starting to go down. I think that's the time when we say, is it changing? Where are you in the IPSS? Are you going from low to intermediate or intermediate to high?
Right.
Those are the reasons why we repeat bone marrows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we have a research, sometimes we may ask you, can we get some marrow because we're interested in your chromosome or something,
mm-hmm.
and we want to try putting a drug in there to see if it works. Those may be a reason to do it, but we can't do it without your permission.
Mm-hmm.
When we studied this, with Dr. Noel, the chromosomes were not being paid by the insurance companies because it wasn't routine part of this of treating MDS. Well, we didn't call it MDS then. So I used to draw bone marrow and carry it myself to the laboratory here because there's no laboratory that will do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we start. Now it's routine to do the cytogenetics. See?
In one of the slides, it was mentioned that the number 5 chromosome
mm-hmm.
is the most common defective one. Does each set of chromosomes have a different bearing on the blood deficiency?
Yes, definitely. And that's what makes this what we call heterogeneous. You're not all the same. If it's not 5q, it's different from a 5q. In fact, we're learning a lot about 5q. That's very exciting, how the mechanism, it actually makes it die prematurely, the cells. And that's one of the reasons why you become anemic, is the cells die prematurely before they mature. So it's exciting to know exactly what happens when you lose that portion of your chromosome. And why the drug, particularly what we call lenalidomide, works very well with that. It actually suppresses that clone. Actually, in some patients, the clone may disappear. The 5Q may disappear. And to me, that's the best response a patient can have. Now, we don't know if that's going to cure the patient or not, but that's one of the early signs that we can do something about the bad clone. Yeah.
Two-part question. Is there any data for people that have had previous cancer treatments with chemotherapy or radiation to develop MDS, if there's a statistic? And the second part of that is, what can you do maybe prior to that to prevent MDS? Is there
you
any
mean
prevention?
While you're getting the chemotherapy and the radiation? I don't think we can do anything to. This may develop years after chemotherapy and radiation, maybe take 2 to 5 to 10 years later.
There's no real data on how many people might develop.
Yeah.
I know that we're doing a lot of research there, particularly in the breast cancer population.
Yeah.
We're looking at whether or not certain genes in patients predispose them to sensitivity of the chemotherapy
mm-hmm.
that they're getting for the breast cancer. It's very much in the research setting. It may, in the future, make us choose other chemotherapy regimens for certain patients for their primary cancers, but that's something way in the future. It's an area of active research.
That's
good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really for Dr. Luger, in the slideshow, you mentioned 50 to 60,000 new cases
mm-hmm.
in a year. That's order of magnitude 5 more than the statements
right.
a few years ago.
Right.
Is that just better knowledge in the medical population?
I think it's a bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's we've changed the definition in multiple occasions. So it used to be that, you know, we changed the definition of MDS, we changed the definition of AML.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that MDS, by standard criteria, required that you have both you have more than one abnormal blood count, mm-hmm. and by the more recent WHO criteria, a single abnormal blood count qualifies you as having mm-hmm. MDS. So I think it's all of those things, as well as a reckoning. I don't think there's more MDS.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think.
But we're less of an orphan, so we get more funding.
Well, it wasn't classified as a cancer before. And it's really changed since then, because now we can do a lot more research with funding. Yeah. The other thing is, since it's more common in the elderly, the population, the baby boomers, which is a big population, is now reaching the age where we see it a lot. Yeah. And so, and I think that's the reason why we, all of a sudden, the numbers have come up. Also, the WHO, when they define what is MDS, they now have what they call minimal criteria, which means we're looking at earlier and earlier stages of MDS. And that's the reason why I'm interested. Can we diagnose them earlier and do something then? The minimal criteria has changed, so that what we used to call other names, we can now call MDS because of that. Yes.
Why did they really consider it a cancer?
Because of the leukemia. Because yes.
When you find a chromosome abnormality, that means that you've got a cancerous cell in there. So since more than 50% of the patients are found to have that abnormality in the chromosome, that tells you that it's a cancer.
Yeah.
That tells you what we call a clone, and a clone by definition is a cancer. So that's what allowed it to go into the cancer.
That's what I'm going to have to do with the blood cells. Like,
now, you can have blood abnormalities that are not cancerous, but the finding of the abnormality in the chromosomes defines it as a cancer.
Because aplastic anemia, for example, gives you the same thing, but it's not a form of cancer because it doesn't, well, I mustn't say never. Because there's some MDS that have very low counts, very hypocellular count, the marrow is empty, and they can go to leukemia. So I can't say perfect all the time. But I think the chromosomes is one of the reasons we know will make it progress to leukemia.
Oh.
Any research being done to suggest that the body has some capability to adapt itself to the condition? Normally, if you're seeing a decrease, and George is only in the platelet cell line, normally intervention occurs at some point as those counts drop, and then an intervention is done. Once the intervention is done, you now change the body chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
So the body chemistry now adapts to that intervention.
If
you do nothing as he did,
he
went from as low as a 13 count, many times being recommended to go into treatment, which he chose not to do, and now he's gone back up to a 22 with no interventions and very stable at 22.
Yeah.
So my question is, do we know whether or not the body may have some capability to adapt
definitely.
Itself?
You remember the slide Dr. Luger showed, that one of the treatment is immunosuppression.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these may be related to an imbalance in your immune system. I have patients that usually they're much younger that I've treated with the immunosuppression is. You suppress the immune system of the patient, and the patient recovers completely. So there may be an immune part of all this. And see, it's very difficult sometimes to choose which ones, because we don't know, we can't really tell right away what the actual mechanism is in the actual patient that we're seeing. Yeah, that's what we're doing research is to figure out which ones to treat with the immune suppression and which ones to treat with the other. We know 5Q minus, you need lenalidomide because it works very well for that. Yeah.
I
think the pace at which people's disease changes also is highly variable, which is why often we take time to get a feel for how your disease changes over time. So with the exception of people with very high risk disease, because we know they convert to leukemia very quickly, and that's very serious, we usually take time to get a trend. Your case is a little different because of the prior therapy that you've had to the bone marrow producing regions, and that, you know, that by itself creates a different path, if you will. So there's just a lot of variability. That's
one of the first thing that I talk to the patient of is, what is your objective for your future as a patient? Do you want to just be comfortable? See, when we're trying to determine who we should be aggressive, and I think Dr. Luger alluded to this, who should we transplant? Because transplant is our only option to cure. So we need to have an understanding that one of your goals may be for cure. Or do you just want to be comfortable and reach a certain milestone in your life and you'll be satisfied? So, but not everybody can go through a transplant. But it's very important very early in the disease, especially in the higher risk, that you go to a center that does it. Because there are a lot of things that needs to be done. It takes a long time to determine whether you are a candidate or not, whether you have donors or not. And if you're receiving a lot of transfusion, you may have too much iron in your body that you don't do very well with the transplant. So those are the things that we need to see you earlier than to come much later. So I'm just saying, if you have a bad disease, or you're in the high-risk group, that you go to a center. A center of excellence for MDS would be fine.
Is there a way of getting rid of iron in the body?
Yes.
Aside from not using a magnet, maybe. I don't
know. Well, we actually did a study with what we call...
XJ?
What's the non-trade name of XJ? It's oral, and it drops the iron and brings it out in your poop.
the big problem, which is unfortunately
what is it called?
Deferasserox. It's called XJade. So there's two issues with it. Side effect wise, it has effects on the kidneys, but the major issue is that it's often not covered by Medicare. And it's a very expensive drug. And so that's why we have special pharmacies that deal with it. What is it, $40,000 a year?
$40,000 a year.
To that point, there is financial assistance.
Maybe they pay for it.
She says they go. To help people with those problems. So, you know, if there's a situation, ask your pharmacy, ask your specialty pharmacy if they can help you through those financial hurdles. Your doctor recommends that you take these prescriptions, and I know Novartis also has assistance programs for that medication. So I know financially it's always a hurdle. It's a scary thing to hear those numbers, but there is help out there. So don't just stop and say I can't afford it. Just, you know, look for other for that.
I've been on XJ for over a year, and I'm Medicare. And it's covered. Now, if you have a supplementary plan, you still have to run through the deductible. And XJ runs through the deductible very,
very
fast.
Rapidly.
Yeah.
but once you've done that, my coverage, I'm paying 5% of the roughly $80,000 a year cost.
Yeah.
So there are options. Just ask those questions of your pharmacy, your specialty pharmacy in particular, and don't just stop and say, I can't. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with her advice in terms of my goal is always to get the cost down to $0 out of pocket, if at all possible. And one thing I would advise is that if you're ever denied coverage, or if a Kopi Foundation says they're out of money, what you want to do is get that in writing. And then if you can approach Novartis with that denial in writing, we may be able to get you covered with free drug. I mean, I can't guarantee it because I'm not part of that process, but I know that's an important step. So when she says, don't take a no as I quit, it's just about no. It's just, can I get that no in writing, please?
Yeah.
And then we can continue. That's all.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of time for my nurse to do it, yeah, but we do it for you. Any other questions?
Thank you very much, both of you, for your time.
Thank you.
We did good times.
Yes, that's great. All right, thank you again. Very